Hello, everybody, and what a fascinating day it's been, and I'm so excited to be here with all of you closing the panels this evening. My name is Deborah Sawaf, and I'm the CEO and founder of the Power of Words brand. I am so grateful for this opportunity to be here with FQ at the G20, and I like to say under the umbrella of FQ, because when you say the umbrella, to me, is shelter and protection. And that's what FQ is as a platform. And you feel sheltered and you feel protected and you feel elevated as well. And thanks to Shelley, Rhonda, the FQ team for this amazing job you're doing. I have a fabulous panel here with me today. I feel like everyone on the panel is a friend, some of them old and some of them that I've just gotten to know. I'd like to say introduce yourself, so we can start that way and not drag this on for too long, and tell us a little bit about what you do. Take a minute to introduce yourself and tell us what you do.
Hi, everybody. Thank you, Deborah. Thank you, Shelley. And thank you, G20, for bringing us together to this amazing platform, the female quotient. We all, as women, feel very powered today, especially after hearing the speech this afternoon. I definitely feel more powered. I am Jyotika Jalani. I'm the founder and creator of a brand called Janavi India. I started 25 years ago, and I feel the journey has just begun. The journey of a cashmere brand. I come from Kashmir. I don't know whether there's a connection there. I started my career with the World Bank, which was a 10-year span. And today, after spending 15 years working for very large luxury houses like Chanel, Dior, and Ferragamo, and maybe 20 others, I decided the Made in India brand has to be something of pride. Deborah is an old friend, 20 years. We did our first exhibition in her home in LA, and I feel very proud that today we have partnered her for something that's very close to her heart and my heart too, the power of words. We'll talk more about that as we go. But what's really interesting is that this platform is not just for women to feel powered, but it's amazing how mental health, which is such an amazing, I would say, topic to be discussed, especially in our country and the world over. Hope we can do some justice here. Thank you.
Hi, everyone. I'll echo all the thanks, but won't repeat. My name is Raj Mariwala, and I'm the director of an organization called Mariwala Health Initiative, which is a funding, advocacy, and capacity building organization that focuses on making mental health accessible to marginalized communities across India. So we have 55 projects running in 24 states with 42 partners. And some of the communities we work with are farmers, victims of violence, regions facing conflict like Manipur and Kashmir, LGBTQIA folks, the homeless, young persons, and of course those who are incarcerated in mental health institutions. So it should be no surprise why I flew from Bombay to be here on this panel, and I'm very glad that mental health is being spoken about. I approach my work through the lens of lived experience, which means I'm someone who lives with a mental health condition, and that informs all the work that I do.
I'm going to take just a second, you know, thank you. I want to say thank you to this panel. Three people of this panel flew in either early this morning or a little bit later in the day to be here, and I'm so grateful and thankful for that, and I apologize that I didn't mention earlier.
Hi, I'm Kalyani Chawla, currently the founder and CEO of Rezon Silverware. I've been a serial entrepreneur all my life. I've done so many things that we really don't have time to talk about everything. But from being a hotelier to going into my own business of exporting fashion accessories, working with Dior and helming the international exodus of brands into India, which was such an exciting time in my life, an e-commerce brand with fashion, and then finally Rezon. I think the proudest moment of my life has always, I mean, I'll always say, is being a mother of a 24 now, gosh, Tahira. I think all of us at some level have a mental health issue at some stage or the other. It's not spoken about. There's no awareness. And sadly enough, because of the lack of awareness, we don't even know how to help, even if we want to, or seek help, even if we need it. And I'm so happy to be on this forum today. This is such an amazing platform of amazing people and women, which is so nice always. And thank you, Debbie, for inviting me to speak tonight, this evening.
Hi, I'm Vishakha, and I will save all the thanks for the later off stage and keep it for the time. But I'm a design thinker by expertise, and the work I do would may startle you. I train people on thinking skills. Actually, I believe that thinking can be trained. From an experience point of view, I have done work with media companies where I have launched Times Now and CNBC as business and strategy. My interest lies in behavior, consumer behavior, and how we behave. Power of words is something I truly believe in. One of my workshops is called Voices in Our Head. And this is all related to how brain functions, how mental models work, and how that drives our behavior. So that drove me all the way from, actually flew me from Bombay to here to be with you.
Hello, everyone. I'm Afsana Cherian Kapoor, and I run an organization called NAMHA. NAMHA provides 24 hours free, anonymous helpline to the local communities. We also run a video podcast where we try to normalize conversations on mental health. Just to make it quick and short, I started my career 20 years back with Barbara Walters, 2020, as a producer. From there to BBC World, CNBC, MTV for little fun. My greatest experience was when I joined as an advocacy and a communication officer for UNDP, North Southeast Asia, and on an issue that was really big that time, that is HIV. I realized that was my calling, and I believe today it's better to light a candle than to curse the darkness. We all know mental health is a problem. Let's work together to find a solution. Thank you.
Hello, my name is Merlin D'Souza, and I'm a musician, and sitting right here on this seat right here is thanks to Debbie, through the power of words, through the power of music, Shelley and Vanessa out there in Dubai. So I'm a founding partner with Brand Music. So I compose and produce music for films from Kabhi Khushi Kabhi Gum to the sound of MasterCard to the sound of Vistara Airlines. So I help create musical footprints through your avatar and your rasa, your personality and your emotion. And well, my journey started, I think, coming from Goa. Every household, I think, you know, parents don't care if you have a profession, but you have to learn the guitar or the piano or the violin, right? That's a birthright. So thanks to my parents, we were growing up in Mumbai, and I grew up right by, in a humble household, by the railway tracks. And at age 3, I knew this is what I want to do with my life. I could hear the sound of rhythm, melody, harmony, and sometimes silence. And it was the sound of the call of the azan from across the railway tracks with the mosques. And on this side of the tracks was the church pealing the bells of Ave Maria. And in between was the sound of da-duck, 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 da-duck. There you go, the sound of melody, harmony, rhythm, and silence, where all else fails, music speaks, they say, right? So here I am sitting today and happy that I use music to help people, you know, like we mentioned, mental well-being, issues that we don't speak about, women issues, and I use that through my medium of music. So if someone had to ask me what's my secret sauce or what makes me tick. It would be music is my moral law. Thank you.
Well, thank you. Thank you to all of you. But what a diverse panel we have here from different careers, all talking about the same topic. And I'm sure I'd have a lot more audience here if I opened it up to talk about mental health. I'd love to start with Raj Mariwala. Raj, Mariwala Health Initiative, you founded that with your dad. And I do believe that it came from a very personal experience. The need to cater to a vast population growing up as a privileged child, we talked vastly on that, and I'd love to share a little bit about why you chose to do what you do, and, you know, also mental illness tied to class and status. And I'm going to give you three things to talk about, and climate change and its effects on women, mainly because I know you do some amazing things in that area.
Okay, I'm going to try to answer this big question. But like you said, this came from a very personal space. It is a family philanthropy. But I think we were really keen on doing it. I was really keen on doing it because, yes, I live with a mental health condition. And that comes with the recognition that I have certain class privileges, I have certain caste privileges. And yet, it took me until about age 22, 23 to get a proper diagnosis, to equip myself with the right tools in order to live with this mental health condition, right? So now imagine if it took someone of my privilege to do this, what happens to the rest of the people? I have access to discourse, I have access to services, I have access to support, and most importantly, I have access to agency and choice in how I choose to deal with my mental health. And most people in India don't have that, so that's where this came from. And I think the approach and why we do what we do in the way that we do it, which is to focus on marginalized communities. I mean, a lot of, I think, conversation here today has been on women. And yet the definition of women is something that we don't query as much or challenge as much. How much are we centering disabled women? How much are we centering trans women? How much are we centering women with physical disabilities versus invisible disabilities? How much are we centering women from marginalized castes, right? So why do we focus on these services? The understanding is that if we create systems for the margins, we will cover everyone. If we create systems for the center, it's only people like me who will be able to access diagnoses and access the right tools in order to live a life of choice and agency, right? And so I think I'll give you one example because Debbie asked on climate change. In India, we've had quite a few cyclones in Odisha. Let's pick Odisha, for example, or Tamil Nadu. Now, there are cyclone shelters. There are some women who did not get access to these shelters, trans women. Other women who did get access to the shelters couldn't use them. Disabled women, because they couldn't use the bathrooms. Then if I go one step ahead and talk about just women, women were sexually assaulted in bathrooms of shelters. Now, what does that just tell you about a global phenomena, climate change and disaster relief? And how do you make something has the right to be accessible to everyone? And how is that connected to your mental health? In which I want to say that we have to talk beyond just diagnoses and conditions and move to mental health as the idea of empowerment, freedom from violence, and access to choice.
Thank you. Afsana, you've worked with the UN most of your life, and I believe very earlier on, you were part of helping erase the stigma around HIV. How are you applying it to what you're doing with NAMA and People for Action? How are you applying erasing the stigma?
Thank you, Deb. It's a very interesting question. You know, when I started working with the UNDP for the HIV/AIDS project, it was really new. Everybody was pumping in money for HIV. You know, we set up 17 offices across North Southeast Asia. There was big stigma. It was a fear of unknown, discrimination, and nobody knew what we are headed for. I think it started with us because we were told to employ 2 HIV positive people in the office. It means sharing our lunch, sharing our workplace, and sharing the same bathroom. And I think that immediately got rid of the preconceived notions we came with. So the awareness started with me. Then we went on to create a lot of advocacy material along with awareness of HIV. It started at a grassroots level, sex workers, human trafficking survivors, and local communities. Then we had to bridge the gap of getting advocacy done at the higher level. We started with media fraternity. We spoke about the right language. So that time people used to say, this person has HIV AIDS. So we went to media and we told them, let's change our wording from HIV AIDS to a person living with HIV, you know. And it started like that. We got declaration from the media fraternity, the top editors, to show compassion and empathy. From there, we went on to getting treatment and support. ARV drugs were really expensive at that time, and there were people who needed them most. So we did collaborations with pharmaceutical companies, with big corporate houses, and got ARVs at subsidized rates for HIV-positive people. I think I just replicated the model where my mental health programming is concerned, starting with awareness in schools and colleges, where we don't talk about mental health. We talk about emotional well-being. So the workshop starts with, how do I handle my emotions every day? Did you know that we all have 8,400 thoughts a day? These thoughts today become how we feel: happy, angry, grief, sad. And from those thoughts becomes emotions. Each one of us here today undergo 400 emotions a day. Can you relate to that? And each emotion becomes an experience. Did you know experiences have a memory? They get absorbed in the cells of our body. So teaching the young how to handle your emotions, identifying, verbalizing is what we start from. Advocacy to reach out to civil society leaders, political leaders, authors, and role models. We started a podcast on normalizing conversations on mental health. Coming to support, we have a 24-hour free anonymous counseling hotline. You'll be shocked. We get about 30 to 40 calls a day. We are back with top 40 psychologists who work with us. And there is a, you know, need for cry and cry for need. Just to quickly give you one little example. We used to get a call from a lady every day. She wouldn't say anything, just cry and sob and put off the phone. It happened over 10 days. And the 11th day, she called us and just had one question to ask. Ma'am, can you tell me tried and tested method to kill myself? Please, she pleaded. I don't want a failed attempt. And that intrigued one of the counselors. It took us 3 minutes to change that emotion of her, that impulse of her, into asking for options for survival. We probed she was being hit by her husband every day. Her children were very busy. Therefore, she was in a state of hell. got her counseling. 1 month later, she got her husband, who had anger management issues. This was his third marriage. He had left 20 jobs in last 1 year. So they all had a life condition, a tendency that we all are born with, a negative tendency. And it comes to us as patterns in our daily life. So she was dealing with low self-esteem issue, being abused from her father, and then being abused by her parents in her childhood. So awareness, imagine, starts from there. And she had the wisdom to make one call to us. That was a choice she made. And that choice today is making her live peacefully. Going from there, we started. Okay, and going from there, we obviously went about doing advocacy at various levels. In schools, we work on four pillars. Bal. Bal means courage, strength. Buddhi means wisdom. Vani means language. And fourth is Karuna, means compassion. That has to start with me. Therefore, I can make you happy. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for that. And that was really touching. And we wish more people would call and talk about what they're going through. So thank you for the work you're doing. Going from there, you know, we always talk about media's role and how can media help what's going on in the mental well-being world and create awareness. How can we change the narrative through media? I'd like to ask, Kalyani, let's talk about your career and how have you, you launched the brand a few years ago, Raison. That was the most recent. And how did you handle how you had to face, you know, social media puts on the few things that come with for an entrepreneur is stress, social media. How do you handle that? How do you handle the social media? Because you're constantly being compared to everybody else out there. What do you have to do to live up to people's expectations?
Being judged.
Yes, and society. And what role does society play in your life when it comes to being an entrepreneur with mental well-being?
You know, we women are just judged, period. You know, from the time we are born, especially for a girl child in our country, if you're fair and lovely, you just about get compensated. But then you go to school and you have to perform. The college you get into, you're judged for that. The life partner you choose, the wife you become, the kind of daughter-in-law you are, you're judged at every stage of your life. You're judged for just your parenting skills. Everyone has so much to say about that. I remember when my daughter was 11 and a half, I sent her to England to boarding school because of I gave her the best education. But so people had so much to say about that. And I have personally been under this surveillance, been in Delhi for 27 years now, no semblance of family. But I have friends here who have been like family. And honestly, this hashtag friends like family gets on my nerves, but I've been fortunate enough to actually have that. Social media today is, I feel, one of the biggest menaces, honestly, as much as it might help to propel a business and what you're doing and constantly being there. I have, if anyone is a follower here, my Instagram is, it's a mix. It's about my work, my life, and it's very easy to assassinate me because everyone knows where I am, what I'm eating, etc. Sometimes. But my life has been the opposite, actually. It's literally Instagram versus reality. When I started, since we're talking about social media, when I started working at Dior, it was only print media. There was no Instagram. there were no influencers that I had to deal with. Thank the Lord. But I had to deal with Bollywood. That was another challenge altogether. Great fun. But I think today we are again judged by the social media in general, you know, and it's your choice to put up what you want to put up, yes. But this constant, you know, pressure that we are under in some way or the other, I use social media a lot now, and for my work, especially my work, of course. But I also use it as a medium to spread a lot of messages. If you follow me, you'll know that. So I talk about a lot of things. And I think mental health today is not equivalent to sitting in a dark room with the curtains drawn. I have been through the lowest ebb of my life. I've been suicidal. And the reason why I'm probably sitting here today is possibly because of my greatest joy and the axis of my existence, which is my daughter. And I feel that responsibility towards her. And it's probably the only reason I haven't given up, but I have been that low. And there has been, I think, because at every stage of my life, it's always been that struggle to do that little bit extra to achieve that little bit that I have. And this constant, you know, having to struggle to get there. And that somehow doesn't seem to end. But I'm just thankful that mentally I've had the support system, possibly with my parents, my family, and some very good friends. And I feel that today what Afsana is doing is, I think, that really needs to be spoken about, because most of the time we don't know. We are again judged because you don't go. It's not, you know, in America especially, it's very fashionable to say, I'm going to meet my shrink today, I have an appointment. It's a taboo over here. And that kind of stigma needs to go, because there is no understanding of seeking help with something which can really be irreversible and so damaging.
You know, you're right about mental health being a taboo topic. It's still a taboo topic in America as well, but twice as much here, I'm guessing. I'm sure. That brings us to Vishakha Singh. You know, everything we've talked about for the last few minutes, and in response to Kalyani's struggles with, you know, dealing with social media and everything else around mental well-being and how do you manage it. You're known to be a thought leader, and you develop mental models to develop leadership mindsets, habits of thinking. Talk a little bit about that, and how can you teach us how to manage our mental health or mental well-being? We know how to go to the gym and, you know, keep our bodies fit. How do we keep our minds fit?
Yeah, that's very important to bring attention to. Actually, the control is in our hand. While we feel that, I'm sure if I ask people that, what do you do to stay fit, you'll say workout, diet, nutrition, but what do you do for your mind? And this I realized not while I was working. And my work on thinking skills is largely based on mental models. And I thought when Debbie and I were discussing what I'm going to bring it to you on the table here, and how do I empower you or equip you? And I just thought I'll leave you with a thought called mind gym. And it's just a very simple thing to say that, look, the control is in your mind. I know what you've gone through. I know you're struggling. I know you're controlling. And every day is a new day. But how do we do that? And my entire work always is all about, how do I bring ideas to action? So actually, I ended up writing a note, and I have some of these note cards that I can give it to you if the topic is of interest to you. And the first thing that I wrote on this note was pause. As a habit, if you build a few minutes, whatever it works for you, daily, weekly, monthly, whenever, but try and pause and say that, okay, I'm going to do breathing exercise. 4, 6, 4, whatever that works, inhale, hold, exhale, meditation, whatever it is, you will see it makes a lot of difference. Second thing, and I'm running because I see the time is up. Second thing that I really like to talk about is remove. Do not add, just remove. And there's a lot of words and negativity and things around. And when I'm saying it, I'll give you one example and I'll give you one story. Allow me that. One example, all of you would be familiar with diet. We all learn about diet. And I'm sure if you are not into diet, you would have heard people talk about, oh, it's my cheat day. Why do you have to cheat? It's such a negative word. If Saturday is your cheat day, 5 days of the week you have worked hard, it should be your reward day. And that's a very simple difference between cheat, which is a negative word, to reward. And you'll realize you want to pick up things that you want to eat, not because it's just the mind is being tricked. I have a personal story to it, which I experienced much before I wrote my entire work on thinking skills. Like we talk about corporate workplaces, women. I was an achiever too. I'm still an achiever, but I was a big achiever too. At a very young age, we have heard this today, just before us, Vardha was talking about. I launched Times Now as a strategy. I was one of the youngest in the team, literally put right up front. Similar positions I kept getting on, and I kept climbing up. I became an entrepreneur. I did one business, worked very well. I was greedy. I wanted to run another venture. I launched a venture to support women. And it was women in fashion. 3 years down the line, somehow the entire funding ecosystem failed in India. I decided that I wanted things at scale, so I decided I should close it down, and I was very confident I'll be able to handle and do something else. I collapsed. I crashed. I crashed so much that I didn't know how to deal with it. And it's not about being unfit or unwell. I had two children. I have two children, and that time they were very active, busy life. At the same time, I was working on another idea, doing things, but I knew I was sinking. I spent some days at my mother's house before I decided that if I'm not being able to control, I'm going to seek help. I was already seeking counselor. Here I meant I'll go to somebody who can give me medication and try and control my behavior. I saw her love. I saw her actually one day just literally ironing my already ironed clothes because she knew what I was going through. And that made me feel and realize I'm not just my work. She has a large bouquet, a large garden, and a lot of roses. It was January 2019. And I ended up writing this and coming back and saying that I am the earth. I'm mother of two children. I am the earth. I am the soil. I am the air. But the colors that you see in me are the colors from the roses in my mom's greens. And this card has all the roses behind here. And my mother is in the room today. She didn't know I'm going to speak about it. She's here today. So I did that, and that voice in the head, I printed it and put it in my wardrobe. I put it on my Insta, and that voice that I'm not just because of my one work failure. And that held me through. And then I wrote voices in our head, which we do not have the time to explain how it functions, but all I would say that remove the negative word that you feel. Pay attention to that. Sometimes people would say, oh, you're this, you're that. If you pay attention to it and just remove it, change it, you will see how difference it makes. The third one is to add, but not add any other thing, but add just little joy, be empathetic. If you have to choose, just simply say thank you to the lift door guy who is sitting inside the elevator operating it for you. You will find so much of empathy coming in towards you. So Mind Gym is just a simple initiative to say the power lies in you. Seek for help, of course, but when you're adding, you can even simply add the ability to listen. Just listen to the next person sitting here and saying that, okay, she needs help. I want to reach out to her and say that, do you want to talk? That simple thing does so much in the mind work, and all of that power is there. So I do have some of these cards, and I hope that makes sense to at least some of you. Thank you.
Thank you. Please give away the cards before you leave. We leave the cards on the table somewhere around here. Please come and take a card if you'd like one.
Coming to Jyothika Jalani, who needs no introduction, she's known domestically and globally. Jo, you've built a very successful business on your own. We've known each other for a long time. You've been an inspiration. And you've built this single-handedly. We've talked about different aspects of mental well-being and how we handle it, but I know spirituality means a lot to you, and we do the tarot cards daily. So let's talk about how you handle your mental well-being and how you've handled the stress of being a woman and building this business, being a woman in a man's world. At least globally, fashion is very much a man's world.
Thank you, Debbie, again. And, you know, it's just so empowering just hearing everybody before me. I'm going to start with 1988, a head injury. It changed my life. Before that, it was the year when I was 12 years old, when my mother changed my name because I was different. You can't be called Savita because you're different. You have to become Jyothika. And I said, okay, how will that make me like my other sisters who are Devika and Ritika? I was always told I was different, and I know I'm different. Kalyani, who's sitting here on my left, will say, what do we do with this mad girl taking off her earrings and sitting at shows in Paris and doing all kinds of silly things? What is being mad? I don't understand normalcy. So, yes, I did have a very severe head injury that led to serious health issues. I wouldn't say mental health issues, but health issues. To deal with leaving my job with the World Bank of 10 years, where my career had just started, I actually left school at 16. I do not have an education at all. It was 10 years of my schooling, that's all I have. I decided that I was going to make a difference. The Savita was going to become a really different Jyothika. And that's when I decided that I was going to do something, like I said, for India, which would make India proud. People always think that, you know, a Kashmiri shawl was something that gave me inspiration. It actually took me the complete opposite way. I decided to do shawls which were completely different. Dealing with having started Janavi from my son's bedroom when I sent him to England when he was 12 wasn't easy. Four Muslim workers in a bedroom of a Marwari household wasn't easy. Dealing with my mother-in-law wasn't easy. Dealing with most of the issues, it was literally four people then, 400 now. The issues are the same, but each one of my workers empowered me. They made me believe, and like she said, fashion is about men. And I always thought men, because they're, at least in our industry, it's all the men who do the work. Even though we are empowering women today, and I'm joining a program called Master G, all the masters are men. There's a young girl who started something. We're starting women masters. But my challenge has been of actually trying to figure out how to keep a team together. Emotions, as you just shared, Afsana, we have emotions and all kinds of emotions. Do you get upset or do you suppress them? I'm a kind of a person who, if I feel something, I just say it there and then. I've got a lot of my team members in this group who all came to hear me today because I'm really, really proud of the fact that each one of them who has a problem or has problems with people, Debbie came into the office and invited them in. But how do you deal with people who are in corporate life? You know, each one is suppressing what a worker will not. If he has a problem, he'll come and say, "Ye problem hai," and we resolve it. But in the corporate world today, like Kalyani just discussed, social media is a big pressure. Everybody wants to be somebody that they're not. My spiritual life, today I'm a Buddhist. Namyo Horenge Kyo has really showed me that if each one of us finds the Buddha within, and we all have one, we don't have to look outside. It's perfectly fine to live in the world that we're living in with everything around us being the way it is. They all call me a spiritual nomad because I move from one guru to another, to a third, to a fourth, but they're all my learning curves. And today, I think, with the kind of platforms that are being set up, and Shelley, this is an amazing one, I think with women, and the power of words. I mean, I thought I was going to be the last speaker, so I thought I was going to end with it, but we will explain that a little bit. I just feel words really make a huge difference. And if we can just spread the word of love and empathy and resilience, most important, speaking out, the world will be a better place.
Thank you. That was the most incredible day. I learned so much about the women who are here, how they model leadership in a powerful way, how they balance what's going on in their homes, what they strive for the future and how they're going to get there. And this will be a day that I will remember forever.
You know, early in my career, and that was such an amazing video around how important it is for all of us to own who we are, to be true to ourselves. Yesterday, I actually said a very amazing quote that's very important and near and dear to my heart, which is quoting Sarah Jessica Parker, my favorite, which is, trying to be a man is a waste of a woman. And